From a quarantine studio brought to you by KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. As the United States Senate readies its vote on a historic $2 trillion stimulus package to counter the economic impacts of the coronavirus pandemic, progressives are demanding accountability for the billions of dollars in handouts to the corporate sector, including $25 billion in grants to the airline industry alone. A large coalition of groups is now demanding a people's bailout to demand that health and well-being of people and our environment is front and center in any bailout package. A number of progressive members of Congress have echoed this sentiment, writing in a letter, quote, "As we work to advance further spending packages to ensure immediate relief and long-term recovery, we need to consider the interrelated crises of income and wealth inequality, racism and ecological decline, which were in place long before COVID-19 and now risk being intensified." Joining me to discuss the People's Bailout is Kaniela Ng, Climate Justice Campaign Director with the group People's Action. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
So first, what is your assessment of what the Senate has voted on very, very early on Wednesday or really late on Tuesday, the Senate finally came to an agreement. The two parties came to an agreement on a stimulus package that includes, as I said, hundreds of billions of dollars in loans and grants to corporations.
Well, I think there's some good elements and some clearly not so good elements and some unknowns. So I think we're welcoming that there's cash payments of $1,200 per adult and $500 per child, but they're only for individuals making up to $75,000 a year or families making up to $150,000. So depending on where you live, like in Hawaii, that's still not really considered like high income. That's actually like medium to low income for households, considering that housing is, you know, over $1 million in a median in many areas. And it's just a one-time cash payment. And, you know, we'll likely have to, there's not much you can do after paying your bills after 1 month, and you might run out of food if this continues. So, you know, that's something that might have to be revisited. Unemployment insurance is extending for 4 months, increased benefits by $600 a week. I think that's good, including self-employed and gig workers, $100 billion into hospitals and healthcare, $150 billion in aid to state and local governments. I think that's really good, you know, fend off austerity, but it also provides some risk because you don't know how these governments are going to use that money. And then there's like small business and education and transit funding as well. But there is $500 billion to corporations without requirements to keep workers, and that, you know, there's no expansion of paid sick and family leave, no expansion of Social Security benefits, no universal health care or student debt forgiveness. There's no guarantee of free care for anyone being impacted, whether or not they have the virus. And there's $400 of funding assistance that didn't, only $400 of funding assistance for elections made it in. And that was something that like the Democrats were really pushing for. So a lot of the things that we're demanding in this people's bailout is still yet to be met.
There's, I understand, something like $350 billion in availability of funds for loans to small businesses if they keep employees on the payroll. But you're saying that such conditions aren't being required of, say, the airline industry, which is getting not loans, but grants to the tune of $25 billion. I believe the conditionality on airlines is simply that they don't use money to, or they're not allowed to have stock buybacks, and their and CEO bonuses are on hold, but not actually to ensure that workers are kept on payrolls.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And also in like certain European countries, the governments are covering anywhere from 75 to 100% of the salaries of employees for businesses that don't get rid of them. So it's not just loans, they're actually paying the salaries straight off. And that's a positive incentive. Like, you don't want people getting laid off. So, you know, a lot of the money that we're giving to unemployment, we could have used to, you know, actually get outcomes that we desire as workers.
So the House is also considering its own version of a bill, and Nancy Pelosi, House Speaker, promoted the fact that there are some sustainability conditions being placed on the airline industry if they want a handout. Here's what Pelosi had to say a few days ago.
Well, I do think that there is a whole concern in our country that if we're giving tens of billions of dollars to the airlines, that we could at least have a shared value about what happens to the environment. But that is an excuse, not a reason, for Senator McConnell to go forward. Some of the
And
other issues, like
that's
not.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi talking about shared values on sustainability that she hopes the airlines will espouse when they're given billions of dollars in bailout money. So, Kaniela, what do you make of this? If airlines are indeed on the verge of going out of business, what could our lawmakers demand from them that would actually be good, not just for the short term, but in the long term? We have all the leverage right now, we the people.
Yeah, I mean, I think stock buybacks have been a huge problem. Like Boeing spent after we gave them that giant tax cut, like over $1 trillion a couple years ago, they went ahead and spent the vast majority of their profits buying back their own stocks to sort of inflate their company's value. That shouldn't be allowed. That's something that's been plaguing our entire economy. A lot of these businesses could actually, like, they're going to be okay. It's the workers that are really going to get hit. I mean, interest rates are literally at zero right now. They could borrow really cheap and stay afloat. But, a lot of us that have families and no paychecks don't really have that sort of situation. And I should say that this $2 trillion package is really critical, and people need help now. Like, they need relief. But it just doesn't go far enough. I think the House package was better. The people's bailout came from this group that this coalition that we that People's Action is a leader on, the Green New Deal Network. And I think what Nancy Pelosi was trying to do there was talk about how that we can demand more like environmental standards. But the things that she was proposing, with respect to supporting what she was trying to do, they don't go nearly far enough to actually address the climate crisis. So the right likes to use that as a sort of Republicans use that as like as fodder against their argument for a Green New Deal. But that's really nothing what the Green New Deal is really about. It's about creating jobs and realizing what's possible, not limiting folks like little emissions and like individual acts. It's about creating tons of jobs, millions of good jobs, and saving our environment, our planet at the same time,
So
just like
just
the original New Deal was.
yeah, so let's actually talk about the how the Green New Deal's basis, the idea behind it, is a very useful framing for saving the economy at this very moment. Capitalists like to use what Naomi Klein calls the shock doctrine to take advantage of vulnerable populations in a time of crisis, but it can be work both ways. Activists can jump in and insist themselves that the progressive ideas be the one that take hold. So as far as sort of a summary of the Green New Deal, the idea is that because we have an economy where not everybody is taken care of, because we have a climate crisis, a taxpayer-funded jobs program that trains and employs millions of Americans, but also ensures sustainability and a climate-friendly economy, is a great way for us to move forward. That could very easily be put into any kind of stimulus package right now, right?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, this is history repeating itself. Like 100 years ago, when the Great Depression hit, we responded with the New Deal. And, if we want to avoid another one, because we are already in a recession, like there are millions of people who are unemployed today because of COVID-19. So we just need to be, we need to be just as bold to meet the scale of the challenges that we face today. And, you know, the New Deal wasn't perfect. There are elements that made it not apply to certain races, certain neighborhoods, Black and brown folks, women. But this Green New Deal should, it shouldn't just not have those problems, but it should actively work to fix those problems through, you know, programs that target marginalized communities and actually boost them up. So we need a stimulus that puts people back to work and actually prevents future crisis. So when you talk about like shock doctrine and the corporations kind of using this moment to exploit workers and get richer, we're not saying like, we're just trying to counter that. You know, we're not trying to say like, oh, this is our moment to do what we want to do. It's just, can we actually have a response that prevents future crises? And I don't think that this deal does that. It does meet immediate relief, which is really important. But if we really want to plan down the line, we're going to have to invest in infrastructure and manufacturing, particularly in the green sector, because once climate change hits in earnest, this crisis is going to seem just like a microcosm. And actually, like once factory farms and certain communities start to flood, it's going to create fertile ground for even more pandemics. So, you know, we need to be more forward thinking in this. And that means investing in high paying green energy and, you know, manufacturing and resiliency infrastructure.
So tell me about the group of progressive members of Congress that have signed on to the letter that I quoted from earlier and what role they can play as the House is negotiating its version of the deal, of the stimulus.
Sure. Yeah, so the people's bailout, it's around these five principles. Health is a top priority for all people, no exceptions. Number two, economic relief must be provided directly to the people. We should rescue workers and our communities, not corporate executives. We make a down payment on a regenerative economy while preventing future crises and protect our democratic process while protecting each other. So, you know, these aren't left or right or Democratic or Republican ideas. These are just broad principles that are rooted in human need. And this moment and forever. Like, these are things that I think all Americans agree on. So members of Congress who are behind this can be writing letters, dear colleague letters to one another, you know, pushing their colleagues, talking about in their base, and not being afraid to go bold. I think what made the original New Deal successful is that it was really bold in its vision. And, you know, Social Security and Medicare are two of the most popular programs today. They're bipartisan support across the entire political spectrum, and those were considered radical at the time. So, you know, sometimes you just gotta lean in and show some leadership. And we're already seeing some members of Congress step up, and we're hoping to see more. I should say too that one thing that hasn't been talked about enough is like rent zero. Like, People's Action have been pushing, you know, a rent freeze and moratorium and actually forgiveness of debt. And you know, if we want people, especially the most vulnerable among us, to have a chance to reduce inequality after this crisis, we're going to have to be really intentional about not just moratoriums on evictions and foreclosures, but also releasing rent and burdens during the time of crisis.
So the demands that have been put forward, this is part of a broad campaign right now. Even if the Senate and the House were to go forward with this $2 trillion stimulus package, many are saying it's not even going to be nearly enough. It doesn't necessarily mean that that the window of time for demanding a people's bailout is over, right? I mean, this crisis is likely, the coronavirus is going to continue for weeks, maybe months, some think even a year. Tell me more about the campaign itself and how people can get involved, you know, to just kind of make these demands, because the past crises have shown us that if allowed to do so, our politicians will take our money, our tax dollars, and give it away to everybody but us.
Yeah, we organized that people's bailout, the five principles, and reached out to those organizations. We didn't know that over 600 organizations would sign on in a matter of a couple of days.
Wow.
So it's exciting to see how quickly it spread. And so on Tuesday, we released the website and the sign-on document to the general public. So individuals can now sign on. There are actions for them to take, like calling their congressperson from a link, also writing a letter to the editor, things like that, sharing your story, because it is stories that will move folks, because you know we're human. And I think we're in this era where people can kind of make up numbers and facts on both sides, and it's hard for folks to trust. But when you're moved by what someone is going through, that can transcend party lines and ideologies sometimes. So we're really trying to encourage folks to share what they're going through this website. And this
and the website is
peoplesbailout.org. But people, you know, the stimulus happened quickly, and but regardless, I think this campaign should keep moving, because it looks like we're going to be needing more support. So this was considered a third packet of the recovery, and the chances are we're going to have a fourth or maybe even a fifth.
I want to pick up on what you were saying earlier about, say, for example, on the health aspect of what you're demanding in the People's Bailout, that everybody be covered. Right now, of course, the U.S.'s health care system and its tremendous vulnerabilities and weaknesses are on full display. One of the pieces of news that came out this week was that immigrants are terribly worried about getting tested if they don't have health insurance because of the Trump administration's so-called public charge rule that contends that you would not be eligible for legal status if you're in the process of applying if it has been found that you took advantage of government-funded benefits. And now people are saying this will likely help the spread of this virus in immigrant communities that are being told to not access care. So you is that a big part of the People's Bailout to insist that everybody get covered?
Yes. And I think if this crisis revealed, the most obvious thing that this COVID crisis revealed was the necessity for a single payer healthcare system, mm-hmm. or what, you know, many have called an improved Medicare for all system in America, because you have this patchwork of insurance that is difficult to figure out even on a day-to-day basis, let alone during a crisis. And we're learning that no one has healthcare until we're all covered, and that we're only as healthy as our least insured. So, you know, that means like a lot of the questions when we're talking about Medicare for All in the primary was, you know, should undocumented folks be covered as well? The answer now is, for the sake of all of us, clearly yes. You know, even if you're not sympathetic to their population at all and care for your own family, like for the safety of everyone, we need to cover everybody. But you know, it's also the moral thing to do.
Tell me more about the worker rights part of this People's Bailout, a set of demands. Right now we're seeing grocery store workers, nurses, delivery drivers be the frontline workers, doctors, you know, be the frontline workers in this crisis, being considered essential workers. They can't just, you know, stay at home. If they do, not only will the economy continue to fail, but there just won't be care for people. People won't have access to food, healthcare, etc. So these are folks who are literally risking their lives every day. But many of these are low-wage workers who don't have job security or don't have health insurance or have very poor health insurance and who have very, very low wages. At the very least, they should be getting hazard pay, and our government should be insisting they get hazard pay or funding through our tax dollars, hazard pay, right?
Exactly. Hazard pay is a great idea. I think the unemployment and insurance expansions was good. The cash payments are good, but again, probably not enough, especially.
And by the way, the cash payments are likely to not go to undocumented folks, right? And these are people who clean houses, who mow lawns, etc.
That's true. And when it comes to like communities of color, Native folks and immigrants, like we've been suffering before the crisis even hit. So this just exasperates it. And, you know, our communities refuse to die just to save Wall Street. And when you hear rhetoric from Donald Trump talking about, you know, racist rhetoric about immigrants or Chinese folks, like, you know, I'm Chinese American. It's really concerning. And I think when we talk about this, when leaders of the Democratic Party like Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer, we need to be explicit, specifically against racism, and actually tie in like race and class and everything else, and not just kind of stay on that policy wonk level, because you know the other side's not. And in these moments when one side is trumpeting really harmful stuff and you're not responding, that could actually shift the culture of America to a really dangerous place.
And I just want to pick up on what I said earlier about undocumented folks who work and who aren't likely going to get these payouts. Many of them do pay taxes into the Treasury simply because of payroll taxes, of course, state sales taxes every time they purchase something. So they are contributing to the Treasury, but usually not getting any of the benefits from it. So there's also an aspect of the people's bailout around the democratic process. And this is a huge thing that hasn't gotten as much attention. We have a general, you know, setting aside the primary elections, we have a general election coming up in November that is critically important, because the worst president at the worst time in our history is looking to get four more years in office. And there should have been a demand in this stimulus, maybe in future packages, to expand voting by mail, which it looks like we're likely going to need. What are you demanding? What have lawmakers done, if anything, on the issue of expanding vote by mail for the November election?
That's one major missing element from the package, is the strong protections of our democracy. Because, you know, when voting turnout is low, Donald Trump will do very well. If voting turnout is high, you know, the people will actually be represented. And generally, someone as polarizing and someone who counts on such a small base in order to gain power won't make it. So, you know, it makes sense that the Trump administration will want to kind of stifle that vote. You know, we got to fight against that. So that's the fifth element of these five principles of the people's bailout really demands. You know, we should have not just vote by mail, but areas where you can kind of drop off your ballot or vote in person, given that there's social distancing in place. It doesn't have to be like the traditional polling booth. It could be just boxes and really simple ways. Also, we have the technology now where, you know, overseas voters are able to vote online. And that's something that we should explore expanding to everybody.
Right. People who live outside the country are able to vote online. There's some technology. You're absolutely right. There's no reason why that can't be extended to people living in the United States. Give out that website again. I believe it's the peoplesbailout.org, where people can find out about the plan and amplify it.
That's right. The peoplesbailout.org or .com. And, you know, this crisis revealed that it just, this system is unstable. It's reckless. It requires us to keep accelerating like a car without brakes. And we can't just hit pause for a minute without wrecking ourselves. So, you know, there has to be a better way. So we're laying out the groundwork, not just to meet the immediate needs, which is vitally important, but doing it in a way that will prevent future crises in the future.
And you said there's 600 organizations that have signed on. The action itself is sponsored by your organization, People's Action, together with groups like Climate Justice Alliance, Greenpeace, Indigenous Environmental Network, Center for Popular Democracy, Move On, Sierra Club, Sunrise Movement, Working Families Party, and others. We'll post a link to the peoplesbailout.org from our website later today. Kaniela, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
My guest has been Kaniela Ng, Climate Justice Campaign Director with People's Action. We've been discussing the demand for a people's bailout. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes, and now Spotify.